Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program, Very Mod. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and the Africa region this Monday, January 31st, 2022. Some squatters on the outskirts of the South Sudan capital, Juba, are threatening authorities in Central Equatoria State.
This is a message that I would like to send to the government, that we do not want Rajab Payam to come and collect our taxes, because if we allow them to collect the taxes, they are the very people who kill us.
And the Cameroon national football team participating in the African Cup of Nations tournament donate money to the victims of a recent stampede.
If the gate was open as it was supposed to be, nothing would have happened because people would have had access to the field.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some residents of Gumbo suburbs of Juba town who settled illegally in the area are calling on Rajab Payam officials to legalize their settlement. The squatters say they settled in Gumbo in 2005, and since then, Rajab Payam authorities allegedly have not provided them with land documents. The squatters have threatened to stop paying taxes if their settlement is not recognized as legal. Viola Elias prepared this report from Awil in northern Bahr al Ghazal. Winnie Chirino reports for VOA from Juba.
One of the paramount chiefs in Gumbo suburb says the squatters who built houses in the area were not told the land on the outskirts of Juba was demarcated. Arol Gao Arol says when squatters moved onto the land there, no permanent structures in the area, a sign the land was suitable for settlement. He says authorities at Rajab Payam collect taxes from traders at the Gumbo market without providing services.
This is a message that I would like to send to the government, that we do not want Rajab Payam to come and collect our taxes, because if we allow them to collect the taxes, they are the very people who kill us. Then what will happen would no longer be my responsibility, but that of the government. We have written a petition to the government of South Sudan and handed it over to almost all the institutions in Juba, with the exception of the president and vice president office.
James Alate is a resident of Gumbo. He says residents have complained about plot allotment since 2007. He says authorities in Central Equatoria State never answered requests for land titles. Alate says some residents of Gumbo who have ancestral property in the area have been calling squatters names.
17 years and you are not settled, and this is your nation. You are being called thief and a land grabber. But the administration of that area is not accepting you. The administration of the area is not accepting you, that you are a resource to him. Now, all whoever here in Shirkat, Gumbo Shirkat now, these are the resources to Rajab Payam. Now, where do they get collecting taxes when it is three places behind those mountains?
Last August, President Salva Kiir created a committee to address the issues of informal settlements and land grabbing around the South Sudan capital, Juba. The committee is tasked with mapping out areas affected by informal settlements. The team also is tasked with digging out the causes of informal settlement and land grabbing in Juba County. The committee has not yet issued its findings. Arol says the authorities at Rajab Payam are not implementing President Kiir's orders on land issues.
They have disobeyed the committee selected by the president himself, but we don't have to fight. We are warning that because of our relatives who were killed here, that means we will continue to stay here even for 100 years. So if the government relocates the capital city, we will move, but if the government does not, then we are going to stay here.
Gale Samuel is the deputy director at Rajab Payam. He says the squatters have no right to acquire legal land documents. Samuel says if complainants consulted the concerned authorities before building houses in the area, they would have been allocated plots. And he says they have no right to stop the state government from collecting taxes.
A community has no right to say they want to stop a government. We are a government. We are a local government entity. And it is our prerogative to lay taxes on those who are operating businesses within our territory. Regardless if the place is demarcated or not demarcated, we have rights to lay taxes on those businesses, unless when you are not operating business.
Samuel says county authorities are working to ensure that the issue of illegal settlement is resolved. According to the Land Act of 2009, the national, state and local governments cannot deny land to citizens based on sex, ethnicity or religion. The Land Act also says that every person shall have access to land for housing, cultivation, pasture, grazing or fishing as shared resources. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, OCHA, warns it may be forced to end its humanitarian operations in northern Ethiopia's embattled Tigray province because supplies are running out. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Intense fighting in northern Ethiopia has prevented aid from getting through to millions of destitute people in Tigray since mid-December. OCHA spokesman Jens Laerke says UN and private aid agencies already have been forced to scale back operations because of severe shortages of supplies, fuel, and cash.
Organizations have warned that operations could cease completely by the end of February. Nutrition supplies for supplementary feeding and treatment of severe acute malnutrition have already run out.
The World Food Program says 13% of Tigrayan children under the age of 5 and half of all pregnant and breastfeeding women are malnourished, a condition that increases the risk of infection and death. Laerke says international aid agencies operating in Tigray report their last fuel stocks were depleted on January 24th. Since then, he says, aid workers have been delivering the little remaining humanitarian supplies and services on foot where possible.
We have seen in recent days, of course, the UN Humanitarian Air Service has picked up again and they are delivering. But you cannot deliver by plane at all the kind of volumes of aid that is clearly needed in the situation.
War between Ethiopian government forces and the Tigray People's Liberation Fund broke out in November 2020. Since then, the conflict has spread to the neighboring Amhara and Afar regions, displacing hundreds of thousands and pushing up rates of hunger and malnutrition. Unlike the situation in Tigray, Laerke says aid agencies can scale up assistance in accessible parts of Amhara and Afar. He says food has been distributed to more than 500,000 people in Amhara during the past week, and nearly 380,000 people in Afar have been reached in an ongoing round of food distribution. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
One of Kenya's most wanted terrorists was arrested this weekend in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where he has been operating alongside the Allied Democratic Forces, an Islamist rebel group in Uganda and the Democratic Republic of Congo. Salim Rashid Mohammed, who appeared in numerous propaganda videos committing violent acts, was captured on Saturday in the town of Beni by the armed forces of the Democratic Republic of Congo. He was on the Kenya anti-terror list after skipping bail in a 2020 terror-related case in Nairobi. Nairobi was offering $100,000 reward for him and four others on terror charges. From the Democratic Republic of Congo, reporter Sadiq Jafar Al-Kanti tells my colleague Jackson Vunganyi, it is suspected that Salim was on his way back to Kenya from Cabo Delgado, where he had joined Mozambique's Islamic State group.
Mohamed Salim has been famous in the propaganda videos of this Islamist movement, where he can be seen in FRDC uniform, killing people, killing soldiers.
Was he arrested? And what does his arrest actually tell us about this group, the ADF?
There is an ongoing operation against ADF. And since 2 months now, there is a big coalition between Ugandan forces, Congolese forces, and UN forces in that region to track and to neutralize all ADF. That's how the guy was captured by FRDC. Not only him, but we can say he's a star because he's the one who has many videos, who is in a lot of videos of propaganda.
Do the authorities have an idea how he ended up in the DRC all the way from Kenya?
himself said he came in DRC in a transit going to South Africa, and he was captured by ADF and then forced to work with them. But it's not true, because we can have some videos from Kenyan authorities who show that this guy was involved in terrorism since long time, and he fighted in Syria with Islamic State. So it's a terrorist, and he didn't come here for looking a way to go in South Africa, but he came to operate as all other ADF.
How long has the ADF been operating in the DRC, and how have their operations impacted life in the eastern part of the country?
This is a very difficult question, because ADF as a militia, not an Islamic militia, but just a Ugandan militia, is in DRC since some decades. But they became a terrorist group and an Islamist militia since, we can say, 2014. And since that time, their presence in DRC impacted everything in the Beni region, Beni and Ituri region, because they kill people, they kill locals, so people cannot join their farms. Some roads are now unusable, so they impacted negatively the economics, politics, security, and everything.
That's reporter Sabiti Jaffer Al-Kanti speaking to my colleague Jackson Vunganyi from DRC. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, what is the future of electric cars in Africa? Find out more after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the best way to introduce change?
You have to educate. Education is the key factor to change. Without education, people will resist.
You have to educate the person. You have to educate people on the situation on ground, the implication of that situation, and if the change is to come in, what impact is that change going to create?
So the best way to introduce change is to understand the change, and you try to educate the people on what change is all about.
I think just go right ahead and do it, because there are always people who don't really like change, and there are also always people who like change and they're conducive to change. And so I think there's always going to be that one person who's like, no, I don't like this, it's different.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. A Swedish-Kenyan company, Opibus, has introduced the first African design and manufactured electric bus in Kenya with the aim of bringing clean energy to public transportation. OPBus, Kenya's first company to make electric motor vehicles, plans to launch the bus commercially in few months and bring it to markets across Africa by 2023. Juma Majanga reports from Nairobi.
As other vehicles jostle for space while belching clouds of dark smoke in the streets of Nairobi, Benjamin Miner is driving a unique bus, one that is fully electric.
I feel privileged driving this vehicle. It's also very amazing when you are driving this vehicle compared to the fossil fuels vehicles, considering there is a lot of vibrations on fossil fuel vehicles and also a lot of noise. But with this vehicle, it's quite silent and very sleek.
Public transport in Kenya and across the African continent is largely run informally, and emission standards are rarely enforced, making the vehicles highly pollutive, as Jane Akumu, a sustainable mobility expert at the UN Environment Programme, explains.
If you look at the cities, the heavy-duty vehicles, which are buses and trucks, that's the bulk of the pollution, you know. So they are a big contributor to pollution. But as I said, they're also an opportunity, because how do we shift to cleaner modes? How do we shift? Because we need mass transport to be sustainable, to make cities more sustainable.
The introduction of electric buses into the African market by OPBus is aimed at remedying the situation. Albin Wilson is the Chief of Strategy and Marketing at OPBus.
This electric bus is a really important first step in the transition from fossil fuel vehicles to electric clean mobility, right? And I think we really show precedence being the first movers in this market with a bus that's even locally developed.
Christopher Miner is a resident of Nairobi. VOA asked him about his experience as a passenger riding on an electric bus.
The ride today is one of its own, having ridden on an electric vehicle. It's just cool. No noises like the combustion engines. There are no smells like the combustion engine. So it's just cool and awesome to be in these vehicles.
Africa's electric car market, currently in its infancy, presents a huge opportunity for investment and the creation of green jobs, says experts. Here again is Jane Akumu.
When you look at our source of electricity, it is renewable. You know, for example, in Ethiopia, it's almost 100% renewable energy, hydro and such. If you look at Kenya, it's over 90-something percent. So we have the energy, you know, we don't have to import fossil fuels, petrol, diesel and all that. So we have the energy here. Then this is also a very good opportunity for jobs, green jobs.
Benjamin Miner notes one other benefit of his electric bus: lower cost of maintenance and fuel. It means more money in his pocket, he says, and a higher standard of living. Juma Majanga for VOA News, Nairobi.
Cameroon's national football team, the Indomitable Lions, donated $85,000 to the victims of the stampede that killed 8 and injured 38 at Yaounde's Olembe Stadium last week. The Indomitable Lions say they cannot be indifferent after people died or were injured as they turned out to support Cameroonian players taking part in the African Cup of Nations tournament. Muki Edwin Kinzika reports for VOA from Yaounde.
Members of Cameroon's national football team, the Indomitable Lions, saying that God will bless victims of this week's crush at Yaounde's Olembe Stadium. The players sang on Saturday evening in Douala, Cameroon's economic hub and coastal city, after beating the Scorpions of Gambia in the quarterfinal game in the Africa Football Cup of Nations, AFCON. A statement after the match from Serge Gifo, the Indomitable Lions press officer, said the players had donated $85,000 and dedicated their 2-0 victory over the Scorpions of Gambia to victims of the stampede that killed 8 and injured 38. The statement did not say how the money would be distributed to the victims, but said family members of those who died in the stampede will be given a share. Narcisse Muele-Kambi, Cameroon's Minister of Sports and Physical Education, addressed the players at Douala's Japoma Stadium after the match.
Vous aviez promis la victoire, mais également une victoire.
Kambi says Cameroonians are happy that their national football team players have helped people who died or were injured while they struggled to watch the Indomitable Lions play. He says Cameroonians are happy that the donation comes after a historic victory against the Scorpions of Gambia. The crush occurred as crowds struggled to get access to Olembe Stadium in the capital city, Yaoundé. Cameroon President Paul Biya ordered the injured to be treated free of charge. Ndukong Edward, a family member of a stampede victim, says the president did not make a statement about any assistance to the families of dead victims. Ndukong says he hopes the government will assist the injured and family members of the dead. He says security lapses by Cameroon's police might have caused the stampede.
If the gate was open as it was supposed to be, nothing would have happened because people would have had access to the field. But if the gate was closed by some overzealous security officers for whatever reason, then they should take responsibility.
Cameroonian authorities Friday blamed the deadly stadium crush on what they said was a massive influx of ticketless fans who arrived late to the game involving the host team and tried to force their way in to avoid security checks and COVID-19 screening. Nasere Paul Beya, governor of Cameroon's central region, where Olembe is located, says the government will assist victims of the crush after the tournament. He says people attending football matches during AFCON should stop uncivil behavior, such as jumping fences to get into stadiums.
We are calling on this population to follow and respect the institutions, to be able to cooperate, to be sure that Cameroon does not present a bad image by being very patriotic and responsible. It should never happen again. Cameroonians should put it in their mind that what happened at Olembe should never happen again.
Beya said some government ministers, senior state officials, and well-wishers have been giving financial assistance to the victims in solidarity with the state of Cameroon. After the crush, the Confederation of African Football suspended AFCON matches at Olembe until further notice. Cameroon is hosting AFCON for the first time in 50 years. The tournament, which is the continent's main football event, was originally scheduled in 2019. The Confederation stripped the event from Cameroon that year because stadiums were not ready. The competition that ends on February 6 began January 9. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and the Africa Center for Disease Control say there are no drugs approved to fight COVID-19. If you have tested positive, talk to a doctor before taking any medicines. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1-202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1-202-630-8011.
That's all we have for you this week. We now end this show in an African style with Shakira and the song Waka Waka. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
This is Africa. Tamina mina, eh eh, waka waka, eh eh. Tamina mina, sakalewa. This time for Africa. Listen to your God. This is our motto. Your time to shine. For Africa.